Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group, and we are located just north of I-94 between Highway 164 and Highway F. We're in the Ridgeview Corporate Park Center. We're also in the Village of Whitefish Bay in the Equitable Bank Building across from Winkies. And on the type of weather we're having now, I'm happy to say that we do have an office in Florida. And we can escape some of the cold weather to visit clients and service our clients there as well. And I have to say, today as we're taping the show, we're expecting in Wisconsin 9 inches of snow. So just a little bit crazy and below zero weather. And but you know what? We're going to have this wonderful, warm conversation today. And it's a conversation that's very dear to my heart. As my clients have been listening to me and they followed my journey, I've been on the radio show almost 35 years. So they have followed me a very long time. And they know that I'm at that point where I'm looking at, do I really want to retire? And what does that look like? And Julie says I'm a failure at retirement. My daughter, who runs my company. And I guess in the normal sense of thinking about my grandparents, which I was raised with grandparents who, when they retired, they sat on a rocking chair on the front porch and watched the world go by. And so, and my grandpa fished. My other grandpa just fished. That was retirement. And now here I am at 75, faced with what does retirement look like for me? And I happened to receive a book, Thriving Retirement, by Elizabeth Zelinka Parsons, who is the author, and she's here with us today. And I always say to my clients that I want to finish well. I want to finish well. And for me, I just want to run hard and then die. But there's so much more to it. And that's why I've asked Elizabeth to come on today, because I notice, and I even know for myself, who I have a very active life and things to do, that I have this retirement anxiety. Like, what does it really look like? And do I really want to go there? And so I want to welcome you to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you. It's really a treat to be here. I appreciate it.
And I am just going to let you run with everything that I said, this whole idea of, you know, how do we finish well? And the other thing, Elizabeth, that I always say is I want to be around people who walk as if they've got a place to go.
I love it. I love it. That's a fabulous quote. You know, and you are singing right out of my playbook, I'll tell you. You know, I think we all at this point have examples of people who, quote unquote, retired in that more old fashioned sense of the word, where it meant, you know, they stepped into a life of pure leisure or no obligation, whatever you want to call it. And it ended up that that was not necessarily the recipe for continued, you know, growth and energized engagement. You know, I think all of us probably have one sort of sad example of that in our history. And what I really believe after working 15 years with people stepping out of intense careers and into what this world is, you know, being called of retirement, that we've really got to change the conversation about what that chapter can be about. And, you know, we're told our whole lives to save our money as if that is the entire, you know, project, right? We just need to have enough money and the rest of it just sorts itself out. Well, I'm here to tell you, you know, there's a whole lot more to thriving in late adulthood than financial security. And I'm not minimizing that that's very important. However, as human beings, you know, the entire time we're alive, we need purpose, we need engagement, we need community, we need connection, and frankly, fresh challenge to keep us alive and growing. So as I've worked with people over you know, many years facing this inflection point, what I've learned is that there are some pretty key pieces to planning into this in a way that feels empowering. One is recognizing you've got to do some version of bridging your identity, because we all get identified with our careers and what we've done professionally. You know, we give a lot to working life. So we've got to think about, who am I going to be and who do I want to be in this next chapter? We've all got to restructure our lives to some degree. That's the second project, is if I don't have the architecture of a job to go to every day or a business to run, what is my architecture? How do I go about creating that? You know, third, we've got to recognize we're stepping out of our comfort zone to some degree. We're, you know, we're going to step into a new world where we might not be immediate masters at everything we try to do the way we have been with our career. And, you know, finally, I tell people we've got to embrace some new mindsets so we can actually get comfortable experimenting and learning and creating in this new era of our life. And I think if you can, you know, create a plan for those things, you can really design an insanely great chapter, you know, call it late adulthood, call it post-career, but that other people watch and say, wow, you know, that's inspiring.
When I read your book, the foreword on it was about your life story and how you stepped into this role. Can you share a little bit? Because I think it's important that people know that you're not just writing about something that you have done a lot of research on. Mm. The research started with you.
Yes, absolutely. And funny enough, started with me at quite a young age. So I was only 35 when I like to joke, I base jumped out of my life. And I'll give your listeners a little background. I, you know, laugh at myself. I've always been this sort of high achiever type A person. And I, you know, ended up pursuing my law degree at night while working full time. You know, you can imagine that was a very challenging and demanding period. Then I joined a top international law firm and did that for 10 years while I was building a family. And the water was getting hotter and hotter, if you will, you know, and I kept trying harder and working harder and just thinking there's got to be a way I can do all of this, you know, be a great mother and be this high powered lawyer and travel around the world. And it turns out, no, you know, for me anyway, I finally hit the wall and realized something had to go and it wasn't going to be my kids. So I decided, you know, I'm going to step out of this career. And I figured, like most things in life, I would just land on my feet and I would figure it out. And so, you know, I moved across the country to Tucson, Arizona. I decided to, you know, just downgrade the expense of my lifestyle. And I thought, I'll, you know, get into business or I'll figure something out. Well, after the first few months of euphoria wore off, I was absolutely lost. I mean, I literally could not understand why I was so unsettled and so sort of lacking in confidence, really. You know, and later what I unpacked was, with no plan other than I had enough money to do this for a little while, I really didn't realize how significantly I had lost my sense of who I was, you know, my identity as a lawyer at a big law firm that I fought so hard to build just disappeared. I was so used to operating under time pressure and time scarcity as a lawyer with that lifestyle that once I had free and abundant time, I had no idea how to function with that. You know, I didn't understand what the structure of my day should be, or even my week or my year. You know, I was, and then I had no sense of how to deploy my skill set either in this new city I was living in that didn't understand, you know, these kinds of high powered transactions I used to handle. So anyway, it was a bit of a dislocating experience that I created for myself. And it probably took me 3 years to really get my feet under me. And in doing so, I delved into all of these issues to try to understand the blind spots I had so that I could create some solutions for other people, because I really didn't think I was the only one who this happened to. And certainly I didn't think it was any less difficult 30 years later in life than it was at 35. So that was a little bit of the background about how I started.
Well, I think what you described is exactly what happens to most people at that juncture of what's next. And some people are forced out of a company. Some people, like you, make the choice to go into, you sort of decided to retire. But it's scary regardless. Yes. And I know for me, one of the things is when I'm home in Milwaukee, my calendar is so full that it's, and I look at it and I go, oh my goodness. But when I'm, and I do go for part of the time to Florida, my calendar is empty. And I look at it and I go, what am I going to do? And I think that that's something that most people face, is this whole idea of a full calendar and an empty calendar.
Absolutely. And you've hit on one of the, you know, mindset shifts that we really work with people to develop. And I address this quite a bit in the book. But what I tell people is that in working life, we are fabulous reactors. You know, we react to content coming at us all day long, especially since the advent of email, right? You know, that's just, anyone can put anything on your to-do list by throwing an email into your inbox. And so as, you know, professional people, we sit there all day knocking balls out of our court. And that's in some sense, rewarding to us. But we are reactors and we're good at that. We know how to deal with the content flying at us. But what I tell people is when you step out of that role and you are now the arbiter of your free time and energy, you have to become the creator of how you're going to live your life. You generate the content on that calendar instead of other people. And the idea sounds very liberating until you face it and maybe aren't used to it. And it feels daunting and scary. And the first thing most of my clients say is, oh my gosh, no one needs me anymore. I'm not relevant. No one's phoning. No one's emailing. What do I do? And I mean, I felt something very similar. And so you really have to still see that calendar as your friend, but you have to look at it more like a palette you get to paint on. It's just a new way of thinking. And we have a lot of tools and techniques and things that we help people begin to get into action with those ideas. But I really believe that's one of the challenges for just about everybody who's had a busy career.
I'm going to just tell a quick story, then we're going to take a break. Several years ago, I sat down with a new client, and he had just retired. And first of all, he sold his business, so he had a lot more money than he ever thought he would. And he had never spent the money. He always was building and putting money in, and all of a sudden, he had this lump of money. And he decided the next year, he always loved going to these shows that they would put on, distributor shows. And he said, it was my favorite time of the year. And so he went back the next year and he said it would take him 3 days to go through the whole thing to meet everybody. He said, Karen, I walked in and I went through in 25 minutes. Nobody wanted to talk to me. I was no more relevant. They weren't asking me to go out to dinner anymore. They didn't say, let's have a drink. They just, hi, Joe, how are you? And, and onto something else.
Yep.
He said it was the biggest awakening of his life. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellen Becker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellen Becker Investment Group. And if you'd like to know more about us, you can go to ellenbecker.com. My guest today is author Elizabeth Zelinka Parsons. Zelinka Parsons. Yeah. And she is the author of Thriving Retirement. And to me, as I remember starting my career back in 1996, retirement wasn't anything I was thinking about. And all of a sudden, I'm not sure how I got from 1996 to 2025. And I can honestly tell you, I don't feel like I should be retired. I sort of feel like I've smarter than I've ever been. Why
Yeah.
retire now? But we also work really hard to have to see if we're good at something else rather than just relying on that one thing. And as my client discovered in that story I told, all of a sudden he went into the show and thought that this was going to be the greatest thing. He had all the time in the world to talk to these people, and nobody wanted to talk to him anymore because they weren't going to eat from him. They weren't
Right.
going to make a sale. They weren't. So in his mind, he was irrelevant.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I think that is one of the key fears that anybody has as they approach something like retirement, because their role in the world is changing. And no, they will not mean the same things to their former community that they did when they were in working life. And you make the right point, which is what that person has to give and take from that community is different now. And it speaks really, I think, to one of the keys of how identified we do get with our careers. You know, anytime we introduce ourselves in this world, we tend to tell people about ourselves based on the roles we play. And, you know, we'll say we're a parent or a mother or a spouse or, you know, fill in the blank career, right? Well, a lawyer, a doctor, a radio show host, you know, and we imagine ourselves, you know, as those roles, and it's how other people make sense of where we fit in their worlds. But we also have to recognize that our roles are not who we are. They come and they go in life. And it's really helpful. You know, we've got a number of exercises for this, and I speak to quite a bit of it in the book, but it's very helpful to remember there are these existential aspects to us that continue on regardless of the roles that come and go. And reconnecting with those things and then imagining new roles that really fit the sort of life we imagine for ourselves when we have more freedom and time can be very, very empowering. But it's as simple as things like, what email address am I going to be using? What do I say about myself on LinkedIn? How am I going to be, you know, introducing myself? I mean, I tell a very funny story in the book about, you know, the first year or so that I was in Tucson, I was introducing myself, you know, saying I used to be a lawyer at the law firm I worked at. And people would just look at me like, what? You know, why are you telling me this? And I realized, boy, I got to get a better story. So, you know, you really do. It's a project, and it's very specific to every human being who's going through this. But just recognizing that those roles are so definitional and realizing that you really can shape new ones can be very empowering. And then it can actually be fun as long as you believe, you know, you're moving in a direction that sounds energizing.
So when is it beneficial to start planning for this? Because typically what happens is people will talk about planning financially well in advance. When I sit down with a client, it's, well, I'd like to retire at 60. I'd like to retire at this age. And I'll say, are you financially prepared? Are you emotionally prepared? Oh, yeah, I've got so many things to do. I've got the honey-do list, and I'm going to golf. And they come back in a year and say, it's not what I thought it would be.
Right.
Because they really haven't planned that portion of it.
Right, exactly. Well, I think that, you know, there are stages to this planning exercise, just as you would imagine. I mean, just as I think you would tell people with their finances, you know, there are, you know, long-term strategies and then medium-term tactics and then short-term to-do items, right? And so I think it's quite similar when you think about the psychological preparation for this inflection point. I mean, first of all, I remind people to think of it like an inflection point. This is not a new destination you're going. This is just a moment you're going to move through, just like graduating, you know, from a degree program would be. You know, we don't walk around all, you know, the rest of our lives saying, I'm a graduate. So you say, I graduated and now I'm doing X. So, you know, I think it even 10 years out, it is valuable just to start broad thinking about, you know, what is left for you to do in this world that maybe has been crowded out by working life? What are the goals that you've got? What are the big dreams you might have, even if they seem unreachable? What's the unlived life? You know, what's the door you didn't go through when you were younger? And is there a good argument for starting to energize at least a foundation or a pathway toward those things, even if it's nothing more than beginning to have conversations with people who know something about that arena? So I think even a decade out is not too soon to be strategic in that way. But certainly within, I'd say, a year or two, it is really crucial to start laying actual groundwork for the way your life's going to look when you get across, you know, to this inflection point and are moving through it. And we help people design game plans for their physical health and well-being. You know, you're suddenly going to have more control and time over your life, so you can invest in that. How are you going to energize your community, resurrect old friendships, you know, maybe invest more in relationships, you know, that you really couldn't tend to in middle life when you were raising a family and working? You know, what are the interests you want to re-energize that could be dormant? But you've got to have something chewy and interesting and challenging to work on. I promise you, pure leisure is not going to do it. And I'm not saying, you know, a month of Saturdays wouldn't be nice, but almost no one I work with wants 365 Saturdays in a row. I mean, that is just boring after a while. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of heavy lifting, to be honest, but it's worth it because this ought to be the richest, most vibrant chapter of your life. And there's no reason it can't be.
One of the things that I feel is that, and you said the word earlier in our show, is we have to have a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I think there's every person in this world has a $1 million idea. They just don't, they don't believe in it, or they don't pursue it. But for me, the way I look at it for me is that I can retire from what I did for a living, but I cannot retire from my passion.
Yes.
And for me, my passion is giving back and working with, you know, different things like that. And I have a charity that I started, and that has been my passion. But I can see it. I didn't see it initially, but now I do, that I have been teaching my whole career. And now I'm working with children, and I'm still teaching, but just totally different than teaching about investments. But there was a passion that I didn't identify. That's mm-hmm. what was driving me, was to be a teacher within our industry. And that has been just, all of a sudden it was like, oh my gosh, that's my passion. And I think everybody has that. It's just, how do you find it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think it is one of the more challenging parts of this. At the same time, it's also got the biggest payoff if you are able to find that theme, as you did successfully, which I applaud you for, because it's hard to get out of your own picture and see the picture in a way, right? To actually have that revelation. But one of the things we really encourage people to do is to think about times in your life, whether they're personal or professional, when you are doing something you're naturally good at and you enjoy both of those things, and you can tell someone else is getting some sort of benefit from it. And don't try to overthink it, but just think of those stories, think of those moments, and make a little catalog of those. And then start looking for the commonalities, because you will find a theme. We all have one. I mean, we've all had moments in our lives, you know, really throughout, where we get that little zingy feeling of, man, I'm right on purpose. I'm right in my sweet spot. I love this moment. And you've just got to allow them to surface and then stand back and find that theme. And what we tell people is, if you can keep that alive in your life, you are good to go. I mean, it's, you know, and there are so many places, and in our world today, there are so many ways to engage. You know, it's so much more expansive than it was 30 years ago. And so we encourage people to really look for that theme, dream big, and then don't kill your ideas. Don't talk yourself out of those ideas too fast. I always tell people to imagine someone asked you to help them do that thing. our brains work differently when we're trying to help someone else than when we're trying to do our own thing. And it is incredible how quickly people start solving that problem. If we reframe it as someone else's goal, they're like, oh, well, I would start talking to this person and do this research and I would take this step. And, you know, they're often running sometimes with a plan. And if I ask them to do it for themselves, their brain just goes blank.
You know, one of the things I love is music. And if you look around, there are so many bands coming up that were kids that had bands in their garages when they were in high school.
Exactly.
And now they're up playing musical instruments. And I look up there and I go, oh my gosh, they're my same age, you know? And yes. They are having, you can just tell that they are having a ball doing what they're doing. So there's so many things that that we could look to encourage us or to open up the avenues to help us determine and discover what might be that light that goes on. My guest today is Elizabeth Zelinka Parsons, and she is the author of Thriving Retirement. It's a wonderful book. Let's see, what do we have coming up? We've got Mother's Day, we have Father's Day. It's a great gift to give to your parents. It's, you know, and it's actually a great book for anyone to read because it's a mindset as to how we even start to look at retirement now. So I started out the show by saying, for me, I still think of my grandparents being retired and old and on the rocking chair, and I'm thinking, I'm not going there. You know, I'm not going there. And I see my other grandpa fishing, you know, and I'm going, I'm not going there. I just should keep working. And yet there's so much joy when you can find a way of combining something that you love. And I know a lot of people have to work to still make money. And so they do that and find different careers. So everybody's situation is a little bit different, but it does change no matter when or who you are. With that, we're going to take a quick break. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellen Becker. My guest today is Elizabeth Zelinka Parsons. She is the author of Thriving Retirement. It's one of my most favorite subjects to talk about. And during the break, I was trying to remember the cat, the famous cat, Puss in Boots. And Elizabeth, I don't know if you've watched a movie. If you haven't, you need to watch it, because all of a sudden, Puss in Boots is in his ninth life and he's got to retire.
Ah.
And he retires, and he ends up going to a cat retirement home. And he gets there, and he looks around, and he says, you're all drinking out of the same bowl. You're eating out of the same food, and you're in hammocks, and you're walking around in slippers. I mean, you know, here I am. And within, like, 10 minutes into the show, all of a sudden, he's drinking out of the same things. He's walking slow. He's left his beard grow. He's lost his enthusiasm. And it's the most, I was sitting there watching this going, oh my God, this is retirement. This is retirement. Right. And then of course, in the end, somebody comes to him and says, Puss in Boots, you're the best cat in the world. We need your help. And he's got his sword out again and he's back.
Yep.
That really hit me. And you've got to watch it because it depicts exactly what happens, the transformation. And then and then this transformation at the end where he gets back and he isn't afraid of nine lives.
Right.
He's not afraid of dying. He's going to live his life to the best that he possibly can. Amazing movie. And that's a lot about how I think people do after retirement. They go through the sludge, you know, this tier period of time. And then many of them do find a new way, but truly and honestly, many of them don't.
Right. Exactly. Well, and I think you point out with that story, some very important sort of points to be prepared for and maybe get out in front of, right? Two of them, I would say, are isolation and contraction, right? So isolating oneself from people is always a bad idea if your goal is to thrive, because we just thrive on connections to other people. There's a fabulous book written called Aging Well that studied a cohort of people across their whole lives. And the biggest indicator of a healthy, you know, long-lived life was the depth and number of great, strong relationships people had later in life. So, you know, your point about him going into this home and sort of isolating himself from that expansive world is very well made. You know, it is very important that we keep building relationships and keep connecting to people, I think, as we enter this stage of life. And the second issue I think is key is to avoid contraction. You know, contracting your world over and over into smaller and smaller circles is just not a recipe for thriving. You know, the point about, you know, I never leave the house. I eat the same food. I don't want new challenges. I don't go new places. Look, I understand everybody's appetite for, you know, wild and crazy living goes down as we get older, but it doesn't mean that it has to become, you know, the gray zone. And so we really encourage people to think about how to avoid isolation, how to avoid contraction, and just to recognize that being of service in this world is always energizing. Even if it's a small thing, it's energizing. And, you know, you want this last chapter of your life to be, why not stupendous? Why should it be anything but stupendous? You know, you've worked hard and taken yourself to this place. And the goal really is to enjoy the ride all the way to the end. And I think you made a point, you know, earlier, being of service is one of those things that always gives us more energy than it takes, always. So if just those three pieces of advice were sort of considered, I think, when people are also thinking about how they're going to, you know, manage the money piece, there would be a lot more happy stories about, wow, did my life really take off after 65? And that's what I hope my book starts to help people do, is just change the conversation and change the expectations about what this chapter can be.
You know, Elizabeth, I'm just curious about something. Who retires better, men or women? And what I had heard was that, and I see this in many of my clients, they retire and they retire to babysitting for their children. Women jump right in that role. And what I see happen is after the children get into grade school or they get into high school, they don't need a babysitter anymore. Mm-hmm. And many of these women have given up everything. They've given up their girlfriends. They've given up their connections. Their husbands, who aren't babysitting, have gone on to make new friends. And I heard that it takes men maybe 5 years to fully get into retirement because they are creating new relationships, where women jump into, many women, some women jump into this mother role again and helping out their kids. And then they're lost again.
Right.
But now they're lost at age 65 or 70.
Right. Very interesting. Yeah. I think you make some great points. And I think, just to address the question of, you know, who does this better, men or women, I think each of them, each group has strengths. The other is more challenged by, and you've hit on one of them. I think when I think of the women, you know, I've worked with over the years, especially if they've been also with a career and family, you know, they've got a double loss in a way, because there is no question anyone that's raised children as a mother understands the inflection point when they leave and you are suddenly, in a way, you know, a retired mom on some level, right? Because they're still your kids, but, you know, they need you less and less. And you're sitting there going, wow, what happened to my role? And so I think that's a whole separate piece to navigate. And I actually address it in my book because I consider it a form of retirement, and it's no less challenging than leaving an actual paid career. Now, for women who also had a paid career and were juggling both, I think, you know, there is a dual challenge of grieving both of those changes. Although I think often women who've had careers also maybe have more insight into the, you know, the additional ways they might connect into outward activities and roles in life, even volunteer things. They have more potential confidence and comfort with that. Whereas I think the men we work with, the bigger challenge they've got is they all feel sheepish about not keeping up with their friends. Most of the women we work with have kept up with their friends on some level. They're really good at nurturing, and I'm generalizing here, but nurturing relationships. And I think generalizing, men have more struggle with that. And they've basically focused on their family and their colleagues. And so when the colleagues go away to some degree with retirement, they're looking around going, do I even have friends? And we remind them, you know, look, all your friends feel the same way you feel. So don't be sheepish, reach out, just energize it. But I think, you know, it's very interesting. It's not all bright lines around gender, but there are certainly themes. And, you know, if you're in a couplehood where you're both moving through these changes, we just like make it a partnership and work on these things together, because you may find as a team, you know, collectively, you can tackle all of these changes much more powerfully.
We're going to take another break. But I do want to mention one thing and then come back to it. It was the word that you said, grieving. And one of the things I think is very important is to understand that we must grieve. Mm-hmm. We grieve, you know, if a great thing happens, you get a brand new job and all of a sudden you have to leave all your workers behind. Or you buy a new house, which is an absolutely wonderful thing, but you're leaving your old neighborhood behind. So it's a good thing, but you still have to grieve it. And I think a lot of people are afraid to even verbalize that I'm grieving the sadness of this next journey. And let's take a break and come back and just talk about that. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. Please go to ellenbecker.com to listen to more of these radio shows. If you'd like to share this show, which is an absolutely great show, you can go there and it's easy to forward that on. My guest today is Elizabeth Slinka Parsons, and she is the author of Thriving Retirement, and her books are at Amazon. They're all over the place. They're really a great gift. I really believe that just getting that new mindset of what retirement looks like is really important for you. When we ended the last segment, one of the things I brought up was this idea where Elizabeth said grieving. And I think it's a normal, natural, and a healthy thing to grieve.
Absolutely. You know, we really do all sometimes feel that we need to hide that from others, you know, that we are processing a loss of some type. And I think it's especially true in a working environment where people don't want to reveal to maybe their colleagues that, you know, they're experiencing what feels like true sadness at the prospect of moving beyond their working life. You know, and frankly, all their younger colleagues are saying, you know, lucky you, wow, you're so, you know, you're so lucky. And, you know, I wish I was retiring. And I think it's easy for people to, until they get close to the moment, to imagine that it's nothing but champagne corks flying out of the bottle and everyone's excited. But for the person moving on, you know, you alluded to this before the break, but they're losing their community. They're losing their sense of relevance, potentially. You know, they're stepping away from the thing that made them feel masterful and competent and capable. You know, they're losing their life routine. And sure, there is a future to embrace, but if that is still feeling a little cloudy or unclear, then the leaving is even more challenging and the grieving is even more intense. And it's very tough when everyone around you thinks you ought to be celebrating. And what I recognize about that is it's lonely. It's a very lonely moment. And so I think it really helps people to realize, no, you're not alone at all. This is a really, really natural process everyone's got to go through. And frankly, it's best to process it because you don't want to end up with bitterness. You know, the way things end is often how we remember them. And so you don't want the end of your career to end on a sour note. You want it to end on a high note. And if that means you've got to process your own grief about the end, no matter how it happened, it's worth doing because you've had probably a terrific career and, you know, you want it to wrap on a really positive note. So we do think that's very important to stepping into the future, you know, with what feels like an empowered stride.
And we've all heard the stories about someone retiring and dying or getting sick, or I think health is dependent on how you view things and how you see them. And so we do want to maintain that healthy attitude, that healthy lifestyle as we move and transition forward. And I do want to ask you, Elizabeth, you've mentioned a couple times clients that you've worked with. How does that work? And if there's someone listening, do you do by Zoom? Can they reach out to you? And how does that work?
Oh, certainly. Yes. So we have a website that anybody can reach out to really, but OncoraCo.com is one and ZelinkaParsons.com is the other. They are both easy to find on my LinkedIn page, but our company works with people ranging from, you know, very personalized individual sessions. We've got Zoom sessions, we've got in-person sessions, and then we've also got really terrific group sessions that we hold throughout the country over the course of any year. And so anybody who's looking for support in planning for this chapter beyond money, because we don't do the money piece, but we do everything else, there will be all kinds of opportunities to engage with our company for that sort of support. So we can provide coaching support in all sorts of formats and love to work with people, of course, around this topic. It's absolutely our niche. It's all we do. And I'm happy to say we've probably supported thousands of people through this journey, you know, from the tippy top CEO level to people who've just had really solid careers from all kinds of different contexts. And, you know, honestly, the themes are pretty consistent.
And how long does that process take? Is it just dependent on each person?
Yes, exactly. So the actual work we do with people, you know, sometimes we'll spend two solid days in the room with one person working on this plan. And we've got other programs. The group formats are usually a couple of days in a nice, you know, environment. And then we will continue supportive coaching as long as that person needs it. And so we've worked with some people 2 years ahead of retirement through the transition and then 2 years after retirement, you know, so we can customize our relationships with our clients really, really specifically to their level of support.
And so if there's businesses out there that do have a retirement strategy, do you work with a business, a specific business, and work with their retirees as part of their benefits or
absolutely
some of those that things? That's
in fact, that was the biggest foundation of our work to begin with, is that we would be engaged by, you know, call it a large law firm or a large company to provide the human support for the individuals in their organizations that are preparing for that inflection point of retirement, because I think people are increasingly recognizing it's challenging. And so as much as, you know, for many years, the financial support was there and strong, there's a recognition that the psychological support and even just the life planning support is extremely valuable to people. So ZelinkaParsons.com is the website that is more tailored to organizational clients. OncoraCo.com is more tailored to individual clients.
What would you like to leave our listeners with today? We've got about 2.5 minutes. What would you like to leave behind here?
Well, I think, you know, it's a great question. And what I would encourage everybody to remember at the highest level is, you know, whatever you choose to do next, you know, approach it with a curious, open, excited mind, and don't be afraid. There's nothing to be afraid of. You've already succeeded. You have managed to come through middle adulthood. You've managed to get through what has, I'm sure, been a rewarding career. And now the sky's the limit. So go for it, you know, and enjoy the ride. Don't let fear hold you back. Don't let the concept of failure hold you back. You can't fail at this. You know, failing at this is really just not trying at all. So getting out there and, you know, thriving and trying things and experimenting and learning, those are the things that are going to keep you energized. And remember that you've got people watching. You've got probably your own kids or the next generation watching how you do this. And I hope we have a whole new generation of people coming behind us that say, oh, retirement, that's just a moment we pass through. And it's a gateway to the richest time in life. I watched lots of people do that. And I'm going to go do that too. So, you know, that's what I'd say is just don't miss out on the joy of the ride.
And my guest today is Elizabeth Zinka Parsons. She's the author of Thriving Retirement, a wonderful book. And the last thing that I would say is there's no one size that fits all.
That's right. That's right.
It's really all about individual, what you want. And I always say that a gift isn't a gift until it's given away. And mm-hmm. we've been given this wonderful gift of careers, and we have so much knowledge. Figure out a way of giving it back and giving it away. Thank you, Elizabeth, so much for being my guest today. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great weekend. Thank you.